At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello, everybody. What's going on? No Bad Dog Army. This is a great podcast. And as you guys know, I record a lot of sessions, and I don't put out everyone, but I always put out the ones I know they're going to be helpful. In my opinion, this is kind of like a master class for dog trainers who are working through issues with owners about like what to do. It's also an incredible podcast for any dog owner out there that's dealing with dogs in the household fighting and not getting along. It's overall just a lot of good information. I hope you guys enjoy this. We do this absolutely for free. I'm going to be in Portugal and in the Seattle area this year doing seminars. The link in the description below. I'm very excited about that. You guys can enjoy the No Bad Dog Army and see all the unreleased footage of all my YouTube videos. There's over $200,000 worth of dog training content in there for a low price of $19.99, as low as. So at the end of the podcast, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions. And so if you guys are listening and you have questions for me or you just have feedback, we would love and appreciate you guys to leave us a review however you're listening to this. So if you're listening to this on Spotify, hit that subscribe button. I think that's what it is. Subscribe to our channel or our podcast channel. And then also if you're on iTunes, head over to the iTunes review chart and leave your review. And that would mean a lot to us. If you're listening to this and it brings you joy or it brings you information that is useful, please help support us by doing those things. Appreciate you guys. And we'll talk to you at the end for the questions. All right, well, let's fill me in.
Okay, there's a long history. I don't even know where to start. So I have three German Shepherds, and I have two females that I guess don't want each other to be around because they are fighting constantly. Now, we have tried several trainers from the beginning. When they first came, we had rescued one 4 years ago, very sweet Shepherd, and then we rescued one about 6 months later. She was a little bit insecure, a little scared, but the other one kind of brought her out, and so they were best friends for about a year, and then we rescued another male Shepherd, all neutered, all, you know, basically spayed, and that started happening, the problems. When we first got him, I guess he fought with one of the little ones, and then that kind of escalated a couple times after that, and then things were kind of quiet. We had to take her into.
You brought him with food and everything.
Oh yeah, when we first came here, he was a very, very resource guarded food, and so he was here, and then for some reason he just kind of snapped out of it. We've had him for a couple of years, and he doesn't even care about that. The other one goes on his bowl now and eats his food. But to bring it back to the beginning, the females have been fighting constant on and off since then, and it's been a whirlwind. I mean, we're at a point where we don't know what to do at this point. We think maybe there's just no repair. I've sent the little one off to, she's the smallest of the three. She's the little one. She was the second one that we actually rescued. And she's definitely has some issues. I don't know what happened to her when they found her in the desert. She had some problems, but we've done board and train with her for 3 weeks with Hunter Canine here. And then she came back, she was a little bit better. And then just that was 2 years ago. And now recently, she's kind of been a little bit more just reactive to her outside surroundings. She's great training for out in the backyard. She listens. As soon as you bring her out front, she's a nightmare.
Okay. So let me just stop you there and regroup what's going on. So you have right now you have three total dogs. You just brought in.
Right.
So you just brought in a male German Shepherd rescue.
We did about 2.5 years ago. He's been with us for almost three.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what
the other one we bought, I think the other one we brought in about 4 years ago, the first one.
One was March 2020. The other one was August.
August 2020.
Okay. Right. Are they all shepherds?
For the most part, yes. Shepherd mix. I mean, one is total shepherd. We just had some DNA testing. The other is the little one, which is the trouble causer.
Mm-hmm.
She's 89% shepherd and 11 unknown.
Okay.
Crazy.
So
then the male is, he came back at like 90 or 89% shepherd. So majority is shepherd and then some other mix of some cattle dogs.
Okay. So you had the two dogs and they were fine. You brought in this last third male almost 3 years ago now. So who is away right now at a board and train facility?
She, not anymore. We did have the little one there about 2 years ago. We sent her when this started happening.
Okay.
And then she came back and then she was better for a while. And then all of a sudden just more. And then she kind of got a little bit kind of like she's really active, hyper. Her activity is just, she's all over the place. You know, she doesn't calm down. I got to put her in her place before I take her for a walk and make her sit there. Otherwise, she's been around like crazy. I don't think the other one really likes it. And so she gets really nervous around her. And so I don't know if that's a good way to explain it, but.
So where are you having?
And then I don't.
Where are you? Where are you right now? Where are you having the problems? What's the.
Just they're. I mean, right now it's just like they could be out together. Like yesterday, I mean, my daughter just left with one of them to bring it to the vet because they got into a fight last night. And I was out there. We were doing training with them. I was at place, you know, because I take them for, I mean, they get activity every day. I mean, I walk them. I don't walk the two females together because I have them one time and then the little one gets reactive. And then all of a sudden the other one doesn't like it. And so they got into a tiff one time when I was walking. So from now on, I don't take him for a walk together. Mm-hmm. So I take my male and the female together and we go probably good 2.5-3 miles. And then I come back and I take the other male and the female up for a walk. And then I bring them back home.
Okay.
And then the weekend we try to get them together. My husband goes with me because I cannot take all three dogs together as on a walk. And so we take them all three together on a walk on the weekends. So they're together trying to see if they could bond together, you know, because they're separate during the week.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, during the day,
we've had five fights this year.
We've had five fights already this year with the two females. And the male kind
of. All in different circumstances.
Right. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, sometimes my one daughter walking from the garage to the house, and all of a sudden the two females will be right there, and all of a sudden they'll just go at it for no reason. I don't know if the research is starting her.
Okay.
And then just one day after that, it just like happened. They got into a fight. They were like by each other, got into a fight. Just a week and a half ago, I was taking them out. And I usually just, I have one in the crate in our room because they got into a fight about a week and a half ago, besides the one yesterday. I put her in the crate and I closed the door. She sleeps in the crate. And then in the mornings, I basically try to introduce them together, you know, so they don't like go at each other. And then I tell her to place. And then I put the other one in my daughter's room. And then I take the other two out, the male and the other female, and then I bring it back. And then I make sure she doesn't come to the door and I make her go place. And then I bring the other two in and the other two go back out. So in the morning, it's just because she's so crazy, I have to control her. I can't have her to the door. Because one time when my husband and my girls were out of town, I was taking them for a walk. This was several years ago. And I was the only one alone. And all three of them got into a fight at the door when I was trying to take them for a walk. So it's like the two females and they just don't like each other or they're just scared of each other. There's no trust there anymore. And I don't know how to regain that trust. And I don't know what to do. If there's even a possibility that it can even be, you know, saved at this point. So I'm concerned. I mean, as far as we've had several trainers in the past come out, some trainers are like, you know, you bring them to the board. That's why you did board and train with her. And so that that worked for a while, but now she's kind of gotten back into her little habits. I mean, we do the threshold, you know, that I don't let them out the door. I mean, I try to, as much as I can, I'm probably negligent on doing a lot of just formal training with them, which I was going to start doing after this incident happened last week. But I mean, I don't let them eat, you know, unless I tell them to. Okay. I put their food down. I tell them to leave it. So they leave it, you know, so they're learning that better. And so, but like I said, sometimes when they're in that mode and it's just like once they get their mind set up, it doesn't take much. I mean, I was just standing there yesterday. I was just done. And then I had the leash on one of them and we were just going through a little bit of place and heel stay. And she was staying and I walked in the house. She was still staying. And then I came out, the other one came out and then I was done with her. And so she walked by me and all of a sudden two of them together within seconds. And I didn't even see a warning. I didn't see a trigger. I don't even know why this happened. Or last couple times, I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. I mean, but we've been bit up so much. I mean, my poor daughter, other daughter, the one that you had the email this morning, she's still in, you know, surgery. She had four surgeries on her finger. The one shepherd lost her tooth and bit her finger. So she almost lost her middle finger from getting involved. She was home by herself. And what happened was somebody rang the doorbell and my daughter went out to get the package from Amazon or whatever delivery it was. Mm-hmm. She came back in, the two dogs went at it. Okay. And from there.
Okay. So let's just back up a little bit and go over some of this stuff. So when there's a couple things that I want to talk about to start.
Okay.
There is an idea that there is a possibility that they will never not want to go after when they're overly stimulated. So when we talk about dogs maybe not liking one another, not getting along or whatever, there's a lot of circumstances and or triggers and or environmental things that can happen if we try to look closely to these things. So there's also the handling and training involved with the process as well to make sure that it's successful. So a couple of things that you said out of the five fights this year were all based off of like what I call this, it creates this little like stimulation funnel tunnel. So it's too much stimulation at a threshold or at a funnel, so a door or a person creating that stimulation. And that's where I think three times you told me as you were talking about what was going on that it happened, coming in, going out, things like that. And mm-hmm. So as a behavioral expert, what I look for is trying to find the different triggers, to find the variables to say, is it going to be realistic for these dogs to coexist? And there's certain things that owners can do to help dogs coexist with one another. And then there's just the personality of the dogs not getting along and then just making a decision to say, we're going to manage this forever, or we're going to rehome one of the dogs, or those are really the only two options under those circumstances. But if a dog didn't like another dog and they were aggressive towards another dog, it would be pretty consistent. And that's not what you're seeing. You're seeing a variable reaction, right? It happens with my dogs. It happens with millions of other people's dogs. You have to see these triggers. I have a puppy now. I'm going over things with my older dog that I need to figure out what is okay and what not. It's not okay. And learning from those mistakes, and also just making sure that you're putting in the training. So a couple of things that you said is you're not really training with them and you're not keeping up on the training that made the dog successful in the first place, which is huge. Because if you send the dogs away to a board and train and, you know, a trainer comes in and says, hey, this is what you should do. You send the dog away to a board and train. The dogs come back. Everything is great. You stop doing the things that made it great. It goes right back to where it was. So those are the immediate things that you should be mindful of during this, you know, conversation that we have, that you can be successful if you do certain things in order to be successful. But also understanding that just by the the information you fired off in the first 5 minutes, you told me 3 out of the 5 incidences were all threshold related, which is a good thing from a behavioral standpoint, because what's really difficult to find results and difficult to find change is when you can't put your finger on the reason or the cause. If you can put the finger on the reason or the cause these things happen, then you can start helping with the situation and making it more successful. Does that make sense?
It does. It makes sense. But sometimes I understand the threshold part of it. And we understood that's how we started doing with the dogs and not letting them come to the door altogether when I take them out. Mm-hmm. So because I don't want that interaction with the 2 females, but like, I don't understand. I didn't look yesterday for the trigger. I mean, we were outside, you know, and then one time one of the dogs, this was a while ago, like a year ago, one time one of the dogs was sleeping on the floor or the couch or whatever, and the other one came over and was going to like just bite her. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we finally got to pull her off. I mean, I don't know what happened, but we've had several incidents like that too, which doesn't make sense. I don't know why she would do something like that when she's, you know, just going, and then all of a sudden turns around later and she wants to know where she is. I mean, she wants to know where her friend is, you know, she kisses her and everything else. And I'm like, dog, doesn't make sense. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I don't know for that. I mean, as far as like when I see it at the door, I mean, we've kind of try to, you know, alleviate some of that by keeping them away or making them place when the door rings and you can't go to the door kind of thing. So that's helped. But this outside thing, like yesterday, really, really threw me for a loop. I was just like, why, you know, we're all outside, all 3 dogs are outside, and why they came together. And then all of a sudden she just full on went on her, you know, like that, which just doesn't make any sense, because I mean, the only thing that was there was me and I wasn't doing anything. I was just standing there. You know, and then all of a sudden it was just like she came right up and then they got into it. Mm-hmm. And I think my other dog is just the one that was the first one we had. I think she's really nervous around her too. You know, I know a lot of times, you know, they get where she doesn't want to, like she comes out. My daughter tells me because they've opted to work from home just to stay here with the dogs during the day so they can kind of keep an eye on them. It's like walking, you know, watching a 2-year-old around mm-hmm. a pool, you know, around water. You've got to kind of watch them, make sure that they're not engaging, not triggering something that's going to set off a fight. And so a lot of times when she comes out, like from where she's laying in a different area, then she'll come out, put her head down. And all of a sudden she kind of scoots around and goes underneath the chair where my daughter sits. And she stays there because she said, I think she's afraid. This is what kind of got to the point where it started her ears are all down and she kind of crawls out and she kind of looks and she's kind of slow at coming out. And then so all of a sudden she kind of finds a spot where my one daughter is, where she's working, and she goes right underneath her. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, I don't know, maybe she's scared of the other dog because she's been attacked. Maybe that's just the after effect of the fight kind of thing, mm-hmm. or the result of the fight.
Yeah. So what is your ultimate goal?
Well, I mean, I know my husband's not a big fan of the little one because of all the issues we've had. The one we've actually sent to board and train, and he has no connection with her. And basically, I mean, he gets growled at from her too, occasionally. I mean, he'll come up and she'll just growl at him. She does not like him for whatever reason. So mm-hmm. he doesn't have attachment. He would have seen her gone a long time ago. But, you know, my other daughters are really, they fear. If I could find a good home for her and she'd have a good life, then I might consider, you know, giving her up, because it would just make things a lot easier. I don't want the dogs to be in a stressful environment either, the 2 of them, and have to deal with this all the time with them. That's not fair for them or us. But at the same token, you know, I mean, she's a really sweet dog, you know, when she's by herself and she's, you know, she seems to be okay. I'm afraid that she's not going to be able to be in every home. If we give her up, she'll probably be euthanized because she's had issues. I mean, just a couple months ago, my husband has a building in Chandler, and we take him there. And on the weekends, you know, we take him for a walk in the industrial park, all 3 of them, because I want them all to be together, thinking that maybe we'll just kind of build some relationship there. And then we get back, and then, you know, they play in the backyard kind of thing. They don't really play, but we were out there. One time there was a cat out in the back. And all of a sudden they got into a fight because of the cat was there. As a matter of fact, one of the dogs, a little one, she lost part of her ear because the other one bit her ear. So, I mean, it's just constantly something like consistently happening, you know, it's just, you know, it's so over the top now, and you can't get them to release either. It's like they're just kind of, once they get into that fight, it's just like that mode. There's just nothing is just the intensity. It just seems like it's building. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at the point where I just like, I don't even know if it's worth trying to, you know, if it can be saved, or if I should be thinking of other options. And
what
like
would
I
be said, the only other what would be your ultimate goal?
For them to be all of us to live happily in the same household.
Okay.
Together. You know?
Okay. So there's ways that you can go about this. And in my opinion, from the information you've given me so far, is there, and what I was saying before is, I always tell people, like, it doesn't take much to soak a damp rag, right? It's like you're already 80% there, which means if the little dog is, not little dog, but the littlest shepherd mix is running around causing most of the altercations or fights, you have options to have your cake and eat it too. You just have to be realistic with yourself. And that's a really easy thing to do, but it's hard for dog owners to do it because they've gone so long with this cohabitated, fine, perfect environment, and now things are starting to not be that. So there's going to be times where there are going to be clear triggers, where there are going to be scenarios where you're like, okay, if you put the dogs into this situation, you have a really high likelihood that there's going to be a problem. So again, those funnels and things that we talked about. But it sounds like there's also situations where there really isn't a trigger that you can put your finger on, which happens, right? So again, sometimes dogs will, if they're kind of cheeky and aggressive and bully, and they're picking on other dogs and they're being aggressive, they're kind of walking around looking for a fight. And that way, that's why when you have these little tiny things, it blows up to this huge thing. And you're like, I don't understand. But also, you know, again, like information you're giving me is like, if one of the dog goes under somebody's leg to say, hey, I don't want to fight, I don't want an altercation, I don't want conflict, that's appropriate for them to do, and it's fair for them to do. But you have to also be sharp and mindful to know, well, this is a really bad situation because this dog is pinned under somebody that they're going to possess. It's basically like going and wrapping their arms around a food bowl and laying down. If I put it that way, you'd go, oh, well, the antagonizer comes over and there's a food bowl laying there and they fought. That wouldn't be troublesome to understand why that happened. But there's also, again, it's not normal, and I'm not advocating or saying that that's appropriate behavior, because it's not. I'm just letting you know that, you know, as you talk through things, hey, the dog comes over and lays between somebody's leg or pins up against somebody because they're nervous the other dog is out. That's also just a really easy indicator for the dog that wants to be a bully to come over and try to fight somebody because they're possessive, or they're just like, well, this is my chance, I'm going to fight you over this. So you have a couple options. That's why I was asking like what your goals are, because I know that this time is short, very short compared to the process of what you need to do. And that's why I want to get very efficient here on our time and make sure that we achieve some obtainable goals for you guys to move forward. And I think if the goal is to have them so you already talked about your first option, right? Which is rehoming the dog that is basically the antagonist, the dog that is causing all the issues and problems. If you had two dogs, it would be a harder conversation, because if you got rid of one, it would fix the problem. And this isn't really that. You have two dogs that are kind of walking on eggshells with another dog that's being a bully and trying to fight. And so that is one option. That's the easier option as far as what you need to do, right? Whoop, here you go. Done. Single household, not a huge deal. The dog doesn't have a problem with people. Dog doesn't have a problem with anything else with training. The dog has already been invested in the training. If somebody wants to pick up that training and restart where they picked up, I mean, that's an easy rehome. Just say like, hey, this dog's a single household. Not that this dog doesn't like other dogs, because there's plenty of dogs out there and there's plenty of owners out there that have to deal with a dog that just viciously and violently hates dogs. They can't be around them. They can't be near them. They can't walk by them. And that's not where you're at. You're dealing with, this dog just shouldn't live with another dog. But outside of that, they're not going to go outside and be reactive. They're not going to hassle you any other way. So it's actually like a really perfect dog for somebody. And I don't think that that would be a conversation of euthanasia, because it's not to that point, in my opinion, from what you've told me.
Right.
So that's,
well,
that's,
she is the little one. She is reactive around other dogs. She is. And she, well, she was, and we did have one neighbor that she walked too close to us and she was swinging her arms. Maybe she was a little bit nervous because the arms were close and she did kind of grab her arm at one time and bit her.
Okay.
So that part needs to get worked on, I think. And it's been more ramped up. She was actually doing really good with bikes going by, but now she's kind of like picking that back up again. Sometimes with people, she's okay with, but we can't have people come over because she doesn't like people either.
Okay. So it's your decision on what the right home would be for her. I don't know her, so that would be your call. But also too, just within that conversation, what I was talking about is all of the time and money spent on training is something that you can also kind of revisit and take advantage of, because you stopped doing all the training that made her successful, right? So that's something that we are, obviously, because I have a dog training facility and I have a board and train program, that happens all the time with us, where just in dog training in general, you get a dog to a point, you basically say, hey, is this what you wanted? They're like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is perfect. This is everything we dreamed of. And then the homework is like, you just got to do this. And then dog owners just boop, stop doing it. So that's the other option too. So that would be the second option, is to say, oh wait, all that money I spent and time on training, why don't we get back to that? Why don't we revisit that? So that's the second option, because that was helping you guys be successful. Like you said, like, hey, we went to training after that. It was great. I stopped training. Things got worse. Boom. That's something that you could do if you had the time or energy or whatever to do. And then the third option would be management. And that's, it's something that is a little bit harder, just because it takes a little bit more logistics, if you will, which would be making sure that the dogs aren't together super often, making sure that the dogs aren't in situations where they're going to be like, right now you're giving them way too much freedom. You have two dogs that are going after each other. And you know that this is going to happen or it could happen. And they're still getting like let out with one another and still getting free. So they have too much freedom. So you let these two dogs off leash and they keep making mistake after mistake, after mistake, after mistake, after mistake, after mistake. And it's like, at what point are we going to step in and say, hey, we're not going to allow these two near each other anymore. And that's something that the management system can keep in play. It's something that you can do pretty easily. Mm-hmm. Just because it's not like if they see each other and they get near each other, it's going to be this, like, there's people who live their lives like that. They're like, one dog hates the other. And if they get an opportunity to kill, they will. That's not your case. It's a very like random situation. And from the information that you've told me, 80% of the reactions have been predictable and make total sense. It's not appropriate. It's not okay. I'm not saying that these things are normal. I'm just saying, considering the dog's relationship and the circumstances, the hardest thing for an expert like me or a dog trainer in general is trying to put pieces together that don't fit. What you're telling me fits like a glove if it's perfect. Okay, we have a dog that has potential resource guarding issues, definitely has some barrier and threshold redirection frustration in these funnels. And 3 out of the 5 incidents that had happened in the last 12 months were there. The other two were not so much there. We did training. Everything was great. We stopped training. Now things are going back. Now what do we do? So those are your options that I think would be on the table realistically for you guys to do. And it would be a matter of basically separating the dogs when you guys, you know, aren't bringing them out for walks and stuff like that, which some people are like, yeah, we can do that. We have baby gates. We'll do that. And that's going to keep them successful. But those are the options that you have.
Okay. Okay. Would you recommend like at night, and just, should they all be like in crates?
I don't think they could be. That's the beauty of management, to be honest with you, is you can kind of pick and choose, like, hey, ma'am, you're making bad decisions. You're beating the crap out of your sister. You lose all your privileges, right? It's like a kid that sits down and you have two kids. One of them does their homework. The other one's like, I'm not doing it. And they both get ice cream. why, what that is that, so to them, that's what they're seeing, right? So you, if you're allowing a dog to continue to make these like pack, if you will, these pack order mistakes, being that, because your job is to step in and advocate for these animals. And I know that that's what you're doing. I'm not saying that you're not. I'm just saying I want to empower you to motivate you to say, like, step in and say, hey, you are absolutely breaking every boundary and thing that we allow in our house. We don't do that here. Like, we do not allow this. This is not appropriate. You're damaging the mental state of mind of the other dogs. We're pouting, our ears are back, we're pinned, we're nervous. Of course we are, because we're getting our butt kicked, and nothing's really, like, the dog feels vulnerable because nothing's really stepping in to say, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. And so to answer your question on the crating, you absolutely could, but you can also just isolate the problem and say, hey, you lose all your privileges. You lose your freedom. You lose at night at couches, at night in the bed, at night near the bed, at night with us. You lose that freedom because you are trying to kill the other dog or whatever is going on, and it's not appropriate. And so you are in your crate because you can't handle. And that is something that's going to protect your pack. It's going to protect the dog that is also the aggressor, because they can't really make mistakes. And you, my job ultimately, I've been talking about this the last couple months, my job ultimately is to help dog owners be less stressful. How can I eliminate stress in their life as easily as possible, right? It's really my job. The dog training, sure, that's just what we call it, because I can't tell people, like, oh, I'm a life coach for dog owners. Like, there's so many things that we can coin what I really do. But the reality is I want to take the stress out of your life with your dogs. I have this innate gift to work with dogs and understand them and realize how they tick. And my job is to take stress off your plate. And so if at night, or even in times where you guys are all hanging out, you're eating dinner, you're cooking dinner, you're watching a show, you're playing games, whatever it is, you take the aggressor that could potentially make a mistake and they go away because they don't deserve to be out with the other dogs because they're making mistakes. And that's part of that management system that you guys can do. It's what I do with my puppy and my Dutch Shepherd right now. I do it every day. There's still, the puppy wants to be up in her face and, hey, how are you? And I'm this puppy. And she has never been around a puppy. She's always been the puppy. So she's having a hard time with that. Now, this is a dog that understands three different languages and is off-leash obedient. Like, she's great. It has nothing to do with training. It's her personality towards the other dogs and what she likes and what she doesn't like. And I can't change that. I have very little to do with that. I can advocate when puppy is, like, going crazy and having the zoomies and she's, like, grumpy, crotchety, I just want to go play ball. I put her outside. I keep him inside. I don't allow him to push her buttons because I know that that's what's happening. And if she turns around and cracks the dog, ultimately, I mean, she made a mistake, but ultimately it's on me because I'm like, I should have known better that this was happening. So I hope that that gives you context on management with her, because you guys don't have to make a decision today or tomorrow or next week. You can just say, I have a dog. She's making mistakes. Let's all not panic. Let's all take a deep breath and go, okay, how can we set her up for success humanely? Meaning, instead of putting her into a crate for the whole day so she never bites anybody or any dog, it's okay, here's the schedule. Here's what we're going to do. The other two dogs are going to go on a walk, you know, with your husband, and this dog's going to go on a walk with you. And then when you come home, hey, we're not going to leave the dogs out together. When we go outside, they're not going to be off leash together. The other dog's just going to have her own time. And that's something that you guys, some people do that forever. It's something that I might have to do at some point. When my dog gets, my puppy now is going to get 200 pounds. And if my shepherd just, if he continues to be bouncy, playful puppy and gets in her face and she just hates it, I might have to separate them often because he can now really hurt her if he really wanted to. And I hope that that never happens, knock on wood. And I'm just giving you an example of somebody like myself, who is a professional dog trainer. I can't dictate how these dogs feel about each other too much. I can control situations like, okay, the food's coming out. Coda, go to your room. Puppy, stay here, right? I can separate them to advocate and to predict, food's out. Somebody's favorite person's out, the girl's friends are over, like whatever the situation is, there's a lot of stimulation. The aggressor, bully, who gets overly stimulated and redirects, and that dog's going away for this situation. And that way you know 100% that you've protected your pack And you've eliminated the stress, which is really my goal. And I want you to be less stressed. I want you to be empowered to say, if I can change this situation and make everybody, including the aggressor, successful, let's do it. Because I think people just feel bad. They're like, well, I don't want to put the dog away, because I think that's human nature, but you also have to understand the risk over reward here. If the dog stays out and makes a good decision, cool. But the whole time the dog is out, we're tense, we're nervous, we're looking, we're doing, nope. And watch the, and we're doing this, and
that's constantly.
Yeah. And, or you can just say, hey, again, we're just going to put the dog in the crate, and everything's going to be fine. And that's, and it don't feel bad, because you're advocating for the dog in the crate. That's kind of like my whole no bad dogs mantra. It's not that there aren't any bad dogs, because trust me, I've run into several dogs who just are born killers. It's more about if a dog.
This is the place where Black is the main character, where we dive into something new like the latest season of Vim, The Scare, and the award-winning American Fiction. Or add to the experience by buying or renting the biopic of a legend, Bob Marley, One Love. And add on channels like Paramount Plus and Stars to bask in nostalgia with Beverly Hills Cop and BMF. Explore Prime Video's culture-rated collection and enjoy old-school greats and new-school hits. Restrictions apply. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
It's making a mistake. It's probably human error. That's really what it comes down to. And so setting your dog up for success, putting her into the crate, and allowing you guys to be stress-free and relaxed. And you can do that easily. Like, again, to give you perspective and context really quickly, I work with a lot of my friends are law enforcement. And I work with a lot of enforcement officers and canines and stuff. I mean, it's kind of just part of my gig, right? And some of those dogs never step foot in a house. They have the lab, they have the golden retriever, they have the kids, and that dog never even steps foot in their home. They live in a kennel outside, they get into the car, they go to work, they love it, they work, they find the bad guy, they find the drugs, they find the bomb, they come home, they get into their kennel, they eat dinner, they go to bed, and they do it again. They don't care. They'd rather not be in the house. They just are that type of dog. And I think dog owners over time have lost perspective of what these dogs and animals and canines are. And if they're not used to something, yes, they may whine, they may scrape the crate and cry, and you might feel a little bad. But at the end of the day, you're like, hey, you sent my daughter to the hospital, almost lost her finger. You're beating the crap out of the other dog. You're stressing the whole family dynamic out. You're stressing my husband out. For right now, or maybe forever, you have lost privileges because you were making bad decisions. And that's the way that that's going to go. And once you do that, you feel like this whole, wow. It's training, but it's also like the simplest way. After you get off the phone with me right now, you can literally start making these changes to say, hey, we're giving this dog too much freedom. And I understand fully and completely, and I have so much empathy for dog owners because I just have this gift, right? And it was just given to me, right? I just have it, right? And so I'm a dog lover myself, and I would be so complexed and stressed and nervous and worried about having this situation. But I have, so my point is, as I feel you and I understand everything that you're feeling, and it is a very tough feeling, but I think as dog owners, we're like, we need to throw time and money at stuff to fix things. And the reality is maybe this dog is, that's the personality of the dog, and that's how she may be for what, you know, forever or for the next 3 years or whatever. But you just have to look at it very objectively and say, okay, this is what it is. Yes, we could be doing training like we paid for. We can get back down to that. Sure. We can make sure that we're texting each other. We're calling, hey, I just got into the driveway. You know, make sure the dogs are away. We still don't create any, like all those things you guys can do in, you know, in conjunction with, hey, the dog that's caught, like what, like if you can just point, like this is the sore muscle here. This is the thing right here. No, it's not my arm. It's not my wrist. It's right here on my neck. That's the problem. That's what I want to focus on. And if you can take that dog out of the equation and manually put it into another situation so it's successful, you can start becoming less stressed with your dog right now, today. Then you can start going, okay, let's, and this would be my roadmap and homework for you. You pull back and you go, okay. And you already kind of mentioned some of these things, right? Which is good. A lot of this consulting process is typical therapy, to be honest with you. It's, this is what's happening. What do we do, right? And that's my job. And so I would just tell you that those are the three options we talked about. So rehoming, sure. Again, like you said, okay, well, we're not really great with new people. We're not really great with new dogs. Okay, sure. That might be a harder obstacle than if it was just, yeah, this dog's just a little too much for us, but they love everybody. I get that. There's also just getting back to the training that originally, like, you guys have been here before. You've come to this catalyst of like, holy crap, we need to do something really fast. You signed up for training. You spent all that money. A trainer worked really hard, I'm assuming, and you got to a really good place. And you're like, okay, this is doable. This is good. And then you slid off, which is fine and normal regression. Okay, so you can get back to that. Or you can do kind of like a blend of things with training and management to say, hey, I'm not going to put my dogs or my family into this situation, and I'm going to limit the opportunities for this dog to make a mistake significantly than what you're at right now. Because if you're just letting her out after she's bitten the other dog five times and you're just continuing to let her integrate in with the other dogs, you're going to see a jump of like a 99% success rate here, because you're just saying, hey, you're the problem, you're out of the solution, you're out of the equation. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And we've done that in the past a little bit, and it seems like once we let her out of the crate, then she's crazy, then she wants to try to find the other dog where the other dog is, you know, she's always looking for her. And so I try to, how do you
easy put when she, it's a great question. And it's an easy solution, okay? So think about, so here's what I want you to think about, like, forever. Just with any dog you have forever, okay? It's really helpful. I've been doing this with my clients lately. It's like, okay, think about, like, break it down. Don't think about the problem of, like, it's like people who, you know, want to run, maybe. They're like, oh, I gotta run. I'm like, why don't you just put on your socks and shoes first? Then we'll talk. And, like, you're going, like, granularly take into consideration what's happening. So this is a rhetorical question kind of, but it's like, how can I, so you, the problem is you open that crate door, the dog flies out to try to find the other dogs. Easy solution. When you open the crate door, you have a leash in your hand, you leash up your dog and you bring your dog out to do whatever you want to do. And then that way the dog isn't running out of the crate, guns a-blazing. Where are they? Because then you're, it's, here's what typically what that looks like, okay? You go up to the crate, the dog's whack, 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 whack. They're spinning. And again, this is a general statement, so forgive me and or it's okay if this isn't exactly what happens. But you get a lot of excitement. You get a lot of stimulation. The dog is basically charging up, sitting there. You pop open that crate door. The dog flies out. They say, move out of my way, mom. Or sister or dad or whatever. And then all of that stimulation and energy is just nuking around your house, like taking energy out, taking frustration out, taking whatever out. And then the other dogs are also like, oh, they're scraping the they're scraping to get away. It's just whole mess. And from a perspective of an expert, I'm sitting there like, okay, this is all bad news bears. Like all of this energy. And again, you can have this with a therapy dog household, but it's still not good. It's still unhealthy. You're letting dogs get way overstimulated in an environment that they should never be overly stimulated, right? Go to Disneyland, let the kids yell, scream, kick, play, have fun, eat ice cream, whatever, okay? But when we're in-house and we're that's where you start, your relationship with your dog start to spiral out of control because you're enabling that behavior. You're allowing that to happen. Let me tell you this. If I came up to a crate with a dog that has bitten, another dog 5 times and sent my daughter to the hospital, the very last thing I would do is allow that dog to barrel out of that crate and run rampant around the house. That is like a ticking time bomb. You're just waiting for this whole thing to happen. That's exactly what you're doing. So you go up to the crate and you say, hey, you're freaking out. You're going crazy, or at least you're overstimulated, whatever that looks like on the spectrum of your dog. I can almost promise you that your dog isn't yawning and stepping out slow and just stretch. That's probably not happening. It's probably like, where are they? What are we doing? Let's go, right? Like little Energizer Bunny, Tasmanian Devil. That is not a, that dog does not deserve, and or it's not a, you're handing the keys over to a toddler. Here, you drive. No, no, no. You don't know what you're doing. You can't handle life. You don't drive. You go up to the crate with your leash. You open the crate door. They try to smash you out of the way. You shut the crate in their face. You go, nope. You do it again. You wait 5 minutes until you say, hey, listen, you don't dictate this. This is not how this goes. Because that's the very first sign that your dog disregards humans and disregards that you exist in this equation, which is why she'll then run around your house rampant and try to pick a fight with anybody she sees. She just doesn't care. You go up to the crate, you kneel down, you're calm. You wait for them to calm down a little bit. You put your leash on, you let your dog out, and then you start to handle business. But the very last thing you want to do with a dog that's bitten five times in the last year is to say, hey, you want to get out of here and go crazy around the house and see what happens? It's like, it's playing with fire. It's not a good idea. But again, to me, I'm like, that is 100% a recipe for disaster, which is good for you, because if you're making really easy mistakes for somebody like myself to say, hey, these are easy mistakes to stop, you're going to see such good success. Like you're gonna feel more empowered. You're gonna feel like you actually can control situations right now, because you're basically like, hey Tom, I'm doing all these. It's like going to a personal trainer and saying, yeah, well, for breakfast I do McDonald's and for lunch I do Burger King and for dinner I get a little fancy and go to Olive Garden and get the Alfredo and then I come home and have a Pepsi and go to bed. And I'm like, and you want to get in better shape? This is great. Because all I need to do is start taking off these low-hanging fruits for you, and you're going to see his results immediately. So copy and paste that scenario with, everything else that you do, right? So let's just let her out of the crate. She comes out. She goes crazy. You go up to the door. The other dogs are sitting there hopping, and they're spinning, and they're whining, and they're whatever it looks like. And then there's this little fight, and you're like, okay, that makes sense, right? All of that stuff needs to be, they don't deserve that freedom. And to be honest, it's like, it's giving them, you're enabling them to make these mistakes. It's just not a healthy environment for any dog. It doesn't matter if they're friendly or they're not. They can't control themselves in these situations, and it's not a good look.
Do you recommend keeping a leash on her during the day?
Yeah, you want to keep a leash on her pretty much any time that she's going to be
out.
Yeah, she just doesn't, unless she can prove to you, like, here's what I would want you to do with her. Like, if I came to your house and you said, hey, this dog has bitten my other dogs 5 times, we tried to break it up, we got to the hospital, whatever, I would want to see, for success, I would expect like level 3 obedience. Go to your place, down, stay. I don't care if the Shrine Circus comes through this room, you're not moving off leash. If you do not have that, then the dog should not be granted off leash freedom. So, like, because treat it like a puppy. Treat it like a puppy that's teething and peeing and potty training. It's either in the crate, and if it's not in the crate, somebody either has a leash on this dog or they have him in a closed room and they're controlled. So that way they can't get into the sneakers and they can't get into the garbage and they can't pee in the corner. That's what we do with puppies. Why? Because we want to limit the failures that they have. We're watching them because they just don't know how to live. And that's exactly what she's doing. She is not making good decisions. So you are limiting her ability to make, because that's what you're doing right now. You're like, it's a free for all. Yeah, go ahead. You know, it's like given, it's all like setting the dog up for failure.
Mm-hmm. I know we want her to succeed. I mean, we want us to, you know, live a normal, somewhat normal life around here so that it can be, you know, cohabitate. But, you know, I just, you know, I'm going to follow all those things. Mm. As far as any other things you could think about, Brianna, anything you think of? And, you know, also too, I think my other dog, the one that she's going after, the little one going after her, I think she's becoming a little, she resource guards my husband a lot too. And so he was, sometimes we'll have to bring it to work. If I have to take my daughter somewhere and the other one can't watch all three dogs, if she's by herself, then I'm like, well, you have to take one of the dogs to work, which is going to be her dog and his dog, which is going to be Moretti. And sometimes what happens is she'll be there in his office, and somebody will come in and she'll just want to kind of go up and she'll grab their hand. She won't really bite, but she's just like, hey, you know, just leave me alone. And I'm like, I tell him you need to kind of, you know, back off on that. And she used to be really good being walked. And now since this more recently happened, she's become more barky barky with other dogs, you know, on their leash, which she never, ever has been. So I don't know if she's creating some sort of different personality trait from all this, what's happened to her from being so scared and being so, you know, in with this dog, that she just is starting to get more reactive herself. It's just kind of basically, you know, coming off on her. I don't know if that makes sense, if they do that or not.
Sure. Well, I think just the whole household of dogs are just, they're spiraling. Like, again, like if I was in a room with a dog that consistently went up and put their mouth on another person every time somebody came in, and I just let it keep happening and happening and happening and happening, and
right,
it's like yeah of course you can't live in the past either. Like do yourself a favor to not, like, a lot of my clients go through this thing of like they never used to do these things. It's like, it doesn't matter what it used to be, it's what's happening right now. You know, it's like going 150 miles per hour and go, well, I was going 10 when I started. It's like, it doesn't matter, it's what you're doing right now. And so you have to again ask yourself these questions in your own head sometimes, and you'll go, oh, silly, of course. Like, so, hey, should I have this dog that's off leash that runs up and puts their mouth on another person every time somebody comes into my office and scares the crap out of them? Probably not, right? So we're continuing to put the dog in a situation that we know that almost 100% of the time they will fail. And every time we do that, you're taking not only are you taking a step back in your training, you're taking a step back in trust with your dog, because they are enabled to do all this bad stuff. And then we come over and we're like, ah, stop, no, don't. And they're like, what, dude? We don't know. That's not how this works. So, yeah, you really gotta get, like, dogs earn freedom. It's not just giving out. They have to earn it, right? They have to have listening skills. You can't just take a 5-year-old to the Disneyland parking lot and say, hey, figure it out. Like, no, hold my hand. Make sure we walk together across busy streets. Like, you can't just, like, it's like bringing my kid to Manhattan that I did the other week. It's like, they don't know what to do. They're going to get hurt. And it's your responsibility to advocate for them, to say, hold my hand, I'm going to pick you up. Here comes a car. Here comes a siren. Here comes, like, these are your things, right? And that's what you have to step in for, to say, like, hey, this dog is making mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. And again, a lot of people are just like living in the past of like, they never used to do that. It's like, it's happening right now. You got to step in there.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys ever use any kind of like supplements, calming things to kind of help them? Or do you think that's kind of...
We have. We definitely have. There's really like a bold line between where medication gets introduced and like proper training. So medication is typically for dogs who are neurologically just messed up, right? They're just, their genetics, they were born this mess. They're always going to be a mess. They just like, when I say mess, I just mean behaviorally. It's not their fault. Like it is with somebody, you know, who was born with depression or anxiety. It's not their fault. It's just like their genetics. And that's where medication gets introduced and things like that. But 9.9 times out of 10, it's just training. Like you just haven't put the time in with training. Like your dog goes up and bites somebody because you don't have a good place. You don't have a good recall. You don't have a good stay, period. It has nothing to do with medication or anything like that.
Okay, got you. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm
not trying to talk you out of like, you know, supplements and medication. I'm just letting you know it's not going to fix the problems you're dealing with.
Right. It's just kind of a Band-Aid kind of thing.
Yep.
You need to get to the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the, I actually bought one of the collars from you guys that, the
e-collar.
What are these? E-collar.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that? Do you think that's a good?
Yeah, it would be good.
Training? I mean, I really, really study because I don't know that much about it. I'm going to back onto your YouTube channel and kind of go through that just to see if that would help.
Yeah.
With them.
So the e-collar is going to be the e-collar for dogs. The way that I train it is a polishing tool. You're at your final step and you finally graduate to off-leash freedom. Here's my backup plan just in case, cause I care about you, you know, like just in case this is my e-brake here. It's the e-collar, right? So, again, like you guys just have to go back and put in the work on everything else. The e-collar again is going to be like putting supplements in there. It's like, hey, can we just throw this at it? It's like, yeah, you could, but the e-collar is once your dog is fully trained and listening, the e-collar is your ability to communicate off leash. And it would be brilliant for you guys. It would stop a lot of the problems that you have. Again, when my puppy and Lakota are out together, she has an e-collar on just to make sure, because I need to be able to step in because I can't watch them every second. And they're still figuring each other out. It's still this kind of courting, get to know each other type thing. And so her e-collar's on, and just in case something happens, I can reach out and touch her from a distance, but she knows that it's me, it's not him. So if she gets punished for that, she knows where it's coming from. And if you did that right now, because it hasn't been introduced and conditioned, it's probably going to make things worse.
Right.
So you got to be really careful about that. Yeah.
That's good to know. I mean, we won't do that for a while then if we need to. But in the meantime, yes, I will. We'll go back to the basics. And I try to do that this week. I was like, okay, we really need to go back. I mean, apparently, you know, she's not listening. You know, she's not being controlled enough. But the thing about it is I've got to get everybody in my household on board. That's the hardest thing. So my husband's the hardest thing to get. You know, he busy at work. He's got his own business. He's like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't have time. So I got to really, that's my hardest thing. But I guess if he doesn't do it, I mean, I guess I still can do it. I mean, he'll just have to follow through. But he's going to be consistent, you know, with at least when they're with him. And that's going to be my challenge, I think, too. I mean, I'll work with them, you know, and hopefully, like I said, you know, my biggest thing was I was at my wit's end at this point after what happened yesterday. I was like, okay, now what? What do I do? Is even make a difference if I even try to go back to the basics and try to help them relearn everything that they were taught? I mean, they all went to, I only did one board and train, but the other one we did go through, you know, classes, but this was like a year and a half ago, like I said, and, you know, I just kind of fell through. I mean, we do some training, but not a lot of training, and she needs a lot of training to be consistent training.
Yep. She's a tough dog. Absolutely.
She's hard. Yeah.
Yep. Just like kids. Some kids are easy. Some kids aren't. And dogs are the same way.
Yeah. Right. Right. I get it. Okay. Well, I guess it's better news. I mean, I was almost devastated to make the call because I thought, well, I'm probably going to end up hearing that we're probably going to have to rehome her. My husband's like, we need to do something with her. So if she's not going to, we can't figure a way to make her better, then we need to.
It's up to you guys. Really, it's so the only time that I would say like, hey, you know, is when you know, people are physically and mentally
exhausted.
They're just not capable of putting in the work, you know, like they're just not. And that's where I'm like, okay. Or they have unrealistic expectations. I'm like, it's going to be safer if you rehome your dog. You have three, you have three options on the table, and you guys can talk about what you need to do and what you want to do. And that's it. That there is no, like, that's it. Like, you got to just step up and start making changes.
Right. Got you. And how, I mean, do you think we should be training her like a couple times a day?
Yeah. Yeah. She's letting you know, like, dogs who misbehave like this are letting you know, like, they're missing something in their life, and they need to be tuned up, you know, like they need to be tuned up. You know, I would even contact your trainer, maybe you worked with, if you still have a good relationship with them, and just say, hey, we need to come in for follow-ups. Things are, you know, and that's the thing is, like, they'll be able to probably tune your dog up right back to where they were. And, you know, use them as a resource.
Do you have any suggestions about any trainers in Arizona that you would recommend? I'm going to Hunter Canine, which is Chad Canine. I mean, he seemed like he's a fairly decent trainer, but I don't know if there's somebody else that you might.
I don't off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't. And just, you know, from a training standpoint, like, I would just say, like, as long as you had a good experience with your trainer, it's usually best to just go back to them. Because, again, like, from a training standpoint, like, we see that all the time when clients come in and they're like, oh, we worked with these three or four trainers. Sometimes that's kind of a red flag, because we're like, you just want to go to the next person that tells them what you want to hear, not what you need to hear. And so if you feel like you had a good working relationship with your trainer, it's you know, maybe send them an email, send them a call and say, hey, you know, we're kind of back to where we were, and we realized that we fell off on the training, and a result to that is getting back to where we were before we came in, and we'd like to schedule some mm-hmm. tune-ups and some follow-ups just to get back into line. And especially if you have it's always good, again, if you feel the trainer's good and you have a good relationship with them and everything was fine, like, it's also going to be really easy for them to grab the leash and go, hey, I already know what to do. I know this dog. I've done the training. Things are going to fall right back into place. You don't have to redo this whole thing.
Right, right. And actually, he's the one that trained her. He didn't have one of his trainers do it. He said, I'm taking over her because of all the issues that we have with her.
I would contact him.
Okay, I'll do that. Personally. We actually did yesterday. Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully we'll... Okay, perfect. All right. Well, my work cut out for me.
Yep. Just play it safe. Like I said, like, don't... You know, take a deep breath and just say, okay, we're going to keep her separated, because that way you know 100%. Like, again, I came up here to talk to you, and I told my wife, like, as I was running up here, I said, hey, Lakota, my shepherd's outside, puppy's inside, just so you know. Like, I'm constantly, like, on this road for success, and if something happens and it's my fault, at least I can point a finger at something and not go, because that's where things get fishy, where you're like, this doesn't make any sense. That's not good. So just set yourself up for success. Isolate the dog that's causing the problems. You know, do your walks, do your training. It's totally okay. It's not a huge deal if you do that.
Okay, that's fine. You want to crate? Sorry, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, she gets very destructive. My daughter was just telling me.
Mm-hmm.
We just fix that. About putting in a crate and she gets destructive in the crate. Yeah, I guess we can't put anything in the crate then.
No, she chewed the bottom of the
crate. Oh, yeah, she chewed. Well, I think a lot of dogs chew the plastic.
Yeah.
Bottom part of the crate.
Yeah. So think about this: whenever a dog is really destructive like that, there's levels. Like, there's neurotic. Okay, there's nothing you can do, dogs. But then there's also dogs who are bored. And if they're not getting enough mental stimulation, and then you put them in a little box for them to, they're supposed to be taking a nap in there. Like, my crate door is always open. My puppy, after he trains or after he goes for a walk, sure enough, he's in the crate snoring away. Door is open. Mm-hmm. He just likes it to go in there. So that's the first thing, that if a dog is disruptive in a crate, you have to look at that. They're not getting enough mental stimulation. Like, the crate is there. Like, same thing for us. Like, right at time where we go to bed at 9, 10 o'clock at night or whatever, and we're sitting there and we're jacked up. It's like, okay, you know, maybe you should work out before bed. Maybe, you know, it's you have to release these things in order to sleep and rest well, period. Like, think about rest in general. Like, in order to rest well and get good sleep, you need to exhaust what your body provides every day. And it's the same thing with dogs. If they're not getting, like, that's the first thing is, like, oh, you know, people say my dog is ripping up things in the crate. I'm like, your dog's probably bored. It's such clear information. You put a dog in a crate and they rip everything up. A dog that goes into a crate should curl around a couple times and boop, fall down and go to sleep. If they're not, that means that they're not getting enough. Their tank is still full and they don't know what to do with it. Therefore, they're looking at the crate pan and they're ripping it up. And outside of that, if it's, again, this neurotic, anxious, like, hey, man, we work the crap out of this dog and still, then you start doing like anxiety crates. That's why they're made. Like impact crate makes an anxiety crate where they can't do that. They can't get a hold of something. So that's safer for them.
Right. Seen those, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's good information. I mean, it's good. I mean, probably just reinforces what I probably thought we'd go back to do. But I didn't know if it was possible to even make it work doing that. So
yeah, if you put in the work, it is. It's totally possible. You just have to powwow with your family and see what y'all want to do.
Right. I got it. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking time to give all the good information. So, I mean, I know I watch your videos all the time.
Thank you.
I mean, good. Thanks for doing all that because it does help a lot. So I appreciate it. And I will continue doing it and be a supporter of, you know, of everything that you do with the animals.
Thank you.
All right. That's awesome.
All right, Dan, well, good luck.
Thank you. Take care.
All right, bye. All right. The first question comes from Shaggy Poodles. Thank you for all you do. I've worked as a kennel tech and a trainer, and I've learned so much from you and your content. I'm a new listener and trainer, but daily listener. I do have a question about my newly adopted 3-year-old Wheaton Terrier. His name is Rascal, and he was trained with us in November for his aggression, a 2-week board and train on the e-collar. And he didn't show an ounce of aggression. His original owner didn't follow any of our advice, and she abused him with the e-collar and physically. His owner gave him up due to food aggression. It's mostly around the meals and high-value items like bones and grooming. Sometimes he snaps and snarls before I even put the food down in the case he doesn't get fed the meal. He gets fed in the kennel right now. When he growls outside the kennel, he comes towards us with his head down and continues to growl. When he's in a mood and looking at him makes him snarl, he redirects on me and my poodle when being corrected with the e-collar. So I've stopped correcting him that way. I have tried hand-feeding him, but he won't eat it or take it. I spit it out and swallow it. It's a whole thing. He just throws it up. He did that for about a month, but gave up because he wasn't eating and I felt bad. Commands in the house. The question here. It feels really random and I need help outside using the e-collar because causing him to causing the corrections won't make the only thing worse. I'm starting to scratch and build. As you guys know, there's two things that I don't give normal advice on. One of them, thunder and lightning. There's no advice there. Your dogs just hate it or they don't care about it, period. Nothing I can do. Or resource guarding. Resource guarding is something I would suggest Shaggy Poodles to book an online with me so we can really go over this thoroughly. It would be unprofessional and dangerous for me to give you advice via this. It's not okay. It's not gonna work. So I would either book a session with me or hire another trainer that works specifically with this behavioral stuff because I don't even know how to start without any context and information back and forth. I apologize that it's not helpful for you, but as I know that you're a new listener, but as just an MO of like across all my channels, those are the two things I can't get into. It's just not a professional move for me. Resource guarding is very dangerous. I would say I would take a step back and maybe go back to a slip leash and continue to try to do hand feeding. You could also, there's so much. I can't, like I said, I don't want to get into it because if I tell you something and you get bit or you get hurt or it makes things worse, it's my fault because I went against my number one rule. My number one rule is I do not give resource guarding advice unless we have an interaction and conversation about it. I also have a couple podcast about it that other people have checked out. So maybe if you can't afford this or whatever, you could check that out for free. Next one comes from Such As Jay. Amazing information. Love your question, your podcast. Question one, should I correct my 16-month intact German Shepherd for marking my fixed 8-year-old male female peas on walks? I correct him when his nose. No, I mean, it's up to you. That's really up to you. There's absolutely zero probably conflict because of that or any bad things happening from that. So I don't see a problem with it. Question two. What should I do when my 16-month intact male German Shepherds are around family dogs that are excessively markers? The family dogs, 11-year-old GSP and 10-month-old intact male Brittany, are excessive markers. They both excessively mark everywhere when there's no other dogs around. I watch my 16-month-old mark and very closely. There's nothing that you can really do. Dogs are just marking. You can't stop that. You can work on a recall and a downstay so your dog isn't walking around marking every single pee that the other dogs mark. That's what you can do. But if the question is, Tom, what do I do when my intact male marks other intact male pee? Nothing. You don't do anything. Dogs pee. That's what they do. You can't do anything about that. The only thing you can do is if you find it's going to be something that's going to be happening, like, oh, the other dog's around. Like, I would also say that you're bound to probably have them not get along at some point, but that's just a side note. You could do recall and a downstay. Control what you can. Next one comes from left-handed letter. Five-star review. Dog with a strong prey drive. Thank you so much for all that your amazing information that you put out. You have transformed my understanding of my dog training and dog behavior. We recently adopted a three-year-old small shepherd mix who is a stray in Texas. She is a wonderful dog, but is very strong prey drive. Yep. Okay, so strong prey drive. I have listened to many of your podcasts about the e-collar training. We are working hard on obedience training currently with your Kickstarter course, as I know obedience is the first step. Is it realistic that we can get off-leash trained with her to use the e-collar despite her incredibly strong prey drive? Yep, absolutely. That's like the beauty of the e-collar is you can definitely recall your dog off of really anything that you want as long as you introduce it the way that we talk about in my e-collar course. But yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty of – that's actually it. It's like, hey, it's like I got a prong collar. I got a slip leash. Is it possible to actually get a dog to walk nicely on these things? It's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, we went to the park yesterday. We're starting our free dog training thing again, which is fun. We're going to put out that series. But it's like the amount of dogs that were – I mean, we almost did that. We're like, let's just record all the dogs dragging, pulling their dogs over with these harnesses. We should just start documenting that. It's like ridiculous how people, you know, feel like that's how it has to be. So anyway, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We have some very exciting, fun stuff coming up, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.